please the court. My name is Joe Moore. I represent the appellant, Heidi Morgan. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
This is, to us,
a straightforward appeal. It's an appeal from a trial court summary judgment dismissal of Ms. Morgan's agency liability claims against William and Maria Hebert, the parents of Michael Hebert, for his negligence when he crossed over lanes and crashed head-on into my client, Ms. Morgan. There's a lot of sort of extraneous issues in the briefing, but I think this boils down to something fairly straightforward, is whether an agency relationship can be created when parents instruct their son to drive their car for their own benefit, even though their son first took the car without their permission. And I think according to the respondents, the answer must always be no, according to Ms. Morgan, and I think what the law would say is that it depends on the facts. And agency law has always been dependent on the facts of the particular case. Here we know that the Heberts told their son to return the car to them that they owned so that they could use it. On the very trip that they specifically authorized him to take, he crashed head-on into my client as he was only blocks away from their home. So we've asked, again, for reversal of the trial court's order and also on the undisputed facts to enter judgment against the Heberts on this liability theory. I want to touch because
it depends on the facts. How could we do the second?
Because I think the key facts are undisputed. The O'Brien case, which is, there's no real case that's on all fours, but the O'Brien case notes that if there are undisputed facts, that this can be a question of law. So we have, and I guess I'll touch on, you know, what the undisputed facts are. This is a motor vehicle crash that happened on Memorial Day. Michael Hebert took his parents' car, no question, without their permission, 3 or 4 days before. He used it one time to go to the store, received a phone call from his dad when his parents got home. His parents had immediately sort of suspected he had taken the car, called him and said, bring the car home. They knew at the time that he had a suspended license, that he was a drug user, but they decided not to involve the police, and I don't believe on their testimony viewed this car as stolen, more of, I would say, borrowed by their wayward child at that point in time.
Does it matter that it's a car?
It does matter that it's a car, because under agency principles it matters about the instrumentality of the harm and the idea of right of control, which is really the central crucial factor in these cases.
So if the son had stolen the father's shotgun and decided to go hunting while dad was out of town, dad makes the same call and says, get it back, and while he's walking the gun back, he discharges it and shot your client, different result, huh?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think that we look at cars differently because the danger,
I'm asking why.
Yeah, the danger in using the vehicles is sort of inherent in the process of, you know, just using that vehicle. If you're carrying,
because you're implying that the parents told him to drive the car home personally.
Yes.
And the firearms, you'd say, well, we told him to bring it back. We expected him to carry it, but we didn't ask him to pull the trigger. Well, they didn't ask him to drive out of the lane and crash into her either.
Yeah, I guess it could be the same analysis. You could reach the same result. I just didn't think about, you know, a shotgun versus a car. There's some inherent dangerousness into a shotgun as well. There's danger in the car. I think it depends, as I said, started with, it depends on the facts of the case and the facts specific here, you know, focusing on the vehicle is as the thing that was being used. There's comments in the respondent's brief about, they just said bring the car home. They didn't say, you know, drive the car home. But I find that a little bit far-fetched to say, you know that he drove the car away. To say bring it home, I think at least it implies, you know, you need to use that vehicle again. Versus, you know, carrying a shotgun, you're not pulling the trigger.
He drive it any more than that he gets someone else to drive it home.
Well, they never said don't drive it after they had told him bring the car home. And, again, they knew that he had driven it away.
Did they ever rescind the prior admonition not to drive it?
I think so. I believe that there is the phone call and the text messages from Maria that were repeated over the weekend said, bring the car back to us, and he says we will.
Well, would you at least agree competing inferences can be drawn from what that last phone call meant?
Well, I see it as when you take the car and you're driving it away.
That's not my question.
I would concede that that could be, there could be a competing inference, yes.
Then summary judgment at a minimum would not be available to you.
That's right. If that is a competing inference, then it would not be available. So, okay. I want to go back to the text messages because those are important. They do kind of add on top of the phone call. That phone call, there is a sense of immediacy and, you know, get the car back home. We're angry about this. But then
do you have to establish that to prove agency that they had control, the parents had control over the timing of when this car was going to be returned?
I think the crucial factor is right of control. The O'Brien case does look at timing, purpose, destination, factors to look at, but the key is right of control. They did have, you know, they didn't specify a time. I think, the respondents again talk about that they wanted it back immediately. That's not in the record before you. Maybe that was implied initially, but they repeated their instructions and sort of reauthorized him to drive their car from his wherever he was back to them multiple times over that weekend via text, and he agrees to do that. So I think that at least it was reasonable time. The purpose of the trip, which is one of the other factors, was to get the car back to the dad so dad could use it. The destination was their home. So I think if you look at the other factors, and then the key is right of control. This is a vehicle that they owned. This is a vehicle that they asserted their right of control over by saying, you're only to use it to bring it, is the way that I read it, you're only to use it to bring it back to us. That's it. And he did that. You know, the testimony in the record is he used it one time to go to the store, and that was the very first day, I believe, that he had the car. And then his next trip is driving it on his way back, and that's when he, you know, that hits my client head on. O'Brien holds that one drive in a motor vehicle at the request. Oh, I guess I'm most out of time, but that would be what I would say is that this is a motor vehicle collision. Those should be analyzed under the O'Brien factors. Thanks.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Troy Hunter for the respondents, Maria and William Hebert. First, I'd like to note that the respondents are a family, a shattered family. They have a broken relationship with their adult son, Michael Hebert, who does struggle with drug use and time in and out of jail. William had all but broken off contact with his son, and Maria had only tangential contact at best. On May 23, 2014, he took the family's Infiniti without permission. That's undisputed. He took it. He left the premises with it. He used it for his own purposes. The Heberts asked that he get the car home. That's the only statement in the record that was made to him by the Heberts, get the car home. And as has been pointed out, that did not instruct him to drive it. It did not instruct him or direct him in a particular manner or method to get the car home. It just requested return of their stolen property, return of their chattel. That request went ignored for 3 days. The Hebers did not know when or if the car would be returned. All they know is that on May 26, 2014, Michael Heber was involved in an accident with the appellant. These facts do not support agency.
Counsel suggests we should look at the emails that apparently followed the phone admonition. What's your thought on that?
My thought on that is that there is no context. There is no substance to what those texts were. The quote from the deposition at clerk's pages 191 is, so what was your understanding of how that conversation between Michael and your husband ended? Get the car home. And what do you understand Michael said in response to that? Okay. That's what you understood him to have said. We text, too, back and forth, telling him to get home. We didn't want to have to call the police, but we would. And he said he'd bring it. We text for days, and he would ignore us. We'd call, and he wouldn't pick up. That's all we have. That's all the information that's before this court is. So the substance of the texts, which was the repeated request, get the car home.
Well, her testimony is that he would bring it. At that point, they could have said, no, have somebody else drive it, have a licensed driver drive it. We'll come pick it up, tell us where it is. Can we have it towed? They had other options.
They had other options to try and recover the car, which they did also exercise, and that's in the record. They drove around the neighborhood looking for the car, trying to find it so they could get it home themselves.
Did they ask him where the car was?
That's not in the record, Your Honor. But what is in the record is the fact that there is no mutual agreement. There's two primary requirements for agency under the theories propounded by the appellants under O'Brien and Baxter, and that is that there be a mutual agreement and that there be a right of control, even if that control wasn't exercised, that there be a right of control. The fact that this car was taken without permission eviscerates the argument of right of control right off the bat.
Isn't your better argument that they demonstrated no right of control by being unable to get it back for 3 days?
Yeah, well, that is the extension of that. The fact that it started with...
He's arguing that something changed. He doesn't claim that there was a right of control when the son took the car, that the right of control was created when there was a demand to bring it back.
Right, which is an absolute right under replevin or recapture. You know, if you have your property improperly taken from you, you have a right to physically take it back if you have the opportunity, and that's a privileged act. But the restatement second of torts says at section 104 that before you exercise that physical attempt to take it back, you have to at least make the request that it be returned to you.
Does there have to be some sort of mutual agreement on all four of the O'Brien factors? Or
I'm sorry?
Does there have to be some sort of mutual agreement as to the time, the manner, the purpose, and create agency?
Your Honor, I believe so. I believe all three of the cases, O'Brien, Baxter, and the Minnesota case cited in O'Brien, Frankel v. Tweet, all three of those cases exemplify time, process, destination. They all involve a discussion between the parties saying, we want you to use the car. We want you to use it for this purpose. We want you to do it by this time. And that it be for their benefit.
Is it possible to infer on this evidence that there was mutual agreement on those factors?
No, because the Heberts never had an understanding as to when or if this car would ever be returned to them. They kept making requests for its return because it was their taken property, but 3 days passed and it wasn't returned. So if it's not returned, how can there be a mutual agreement? That extends the agreement into perpetuity.
Well, agreements can be made and accepted by performance. Their demand was implicitly that he get the car back.
Immediately.
It didn't specify, well, you can imply immediacy. It doesn't specify the manner. It seems indifferent as to the manner, but that wouldn't make it unenforceable.
But if we're missing these important terms, then how can we have mutuality? How can we have a mutual agreement if the court seems to be admitting that there are missing elements or unclear elements to the agreement? If those elements are missing, then you cannot have a mutual agreement. And they don't have a right to control someone who's taken their property without their permission and doesn't return it for an extended period of time. That is not a right of control. It's not even a suggestion of control. It's exactly the opposite. It's the utter lack of control. And the other thing that's important to take note, as was noted, is that this is a family. It's a broken family. It's a shattered family, but a family nonetheless. And the plaintiffs abandoned their family car doctrine. It is important that this is a car because there's a doctrine under the law that says if it is a car and it's a part of involving a family, that we have a doctrine in place for finding liability if someone drives that car under the family car doctrine. The plaintiff abandoned that claim and said at the court below and to this court they could not satisfy the elements of a family car doctrine. And yet they want to make the same arguments for a general agency theory and even saying, look, they're a parent child. Yes, they are. Doesn't that make them a family? Does that make it a family car doctrine? Doesn't that make it the very claim that you abandoned at the court below and this court is now barred from considering?
Are you suggesting the family car doctrine supplants agency principles in the context of a family in a vehicle?
That does seem to be the case, Your Honor. The statutes say that if you don't have a family member, then you look at general agency. Therefore, if you have family, then you fall under the family car doctrine and you must satisfy those elements. You can't have it both ways. You can't argue that this is a familial relationship, a special relationship, and therefore you have general agency. No, therefore you have a family. And if you want to argue it's a family, then argue the family car doctrine. If you want to argue that it's a stranger that took the car, then argue general agency. You can't have it both ways, and that's what the plaintiff is trying to do here today.
Well, could the family car doctrine be viewed differently and viewed instead as a conclusive presumption that some elements of what you'd normally have to prove under agency are true so long as the car is made available for a family member?
The elements of the family car doctrine, Your Honor, under Cameron versus Downs 32 Austin App 875 are the vehicle is owned, provided, or maintained by a parent for the general use, pleasure, and convenience of the family, and at the time of the accident, the vehicle is being driven by a member of the family for whom the vehicle is maintained. Again.
But you don't have the time and place elements that you have in general agency law.
Correct.
So,
and the last element, just to make sure I complete the record, is with the express and implied consent of the parent, which, again, is admitted we do not have.
So I throw back my question to you. The family car doctrine eliminates two elements. Isn't it perhaps just the law presuming conclusively that those two elements are established in the family context?
I believe, Your Honor, that the facts of this case place it squarely under the family car doctrine, which was abandoned. That now the plaintiffs are trying to argue the very elements of the family car doctrine under the more expansive general agency theory. I don't think that they can do that. I don't think the court can consider it. But if the court does consider it, I go back to my original arguments that we don't have any of those elements here as to time, destination, method. There is no right of control that is exercised or even present in a stealing situation such as this, and that there is no mutual agreement because the necessary elements that would be required to find an agreement at all, much less a mutual agreement, are absent or vague at best. The Hebers did not agree that Michael could take, use, or drive the Infiniti for any purpose. That's clear on the record, clear from the testimony of William Hebert. Michael was forbidden from driving it, and it is uncontested that Michael took the Infiniti without permission, and when the Hebers demanded its return, the request went ignored for 3 days. There is no agreement. There is no right or exercise or control. There is no agency. Michael was only going to return the Infiniti if and when it pleased him, not the Hebers. We ask that you affirm. Thank you, Your Honor.
So first of all, I believe it's a multi-factor test, meaning we weigh those factors, not just, you know, if you have sort of some ambiguity as with timing or driving. I think those have to be construed in favor of Ms. Morgan, as this is a summary judgment hearing. But even if there is some ambiguity there, these are just different factors that we weigh. And the key factor is right of control. We have manifestation of intent to exert control by the Hebert's communications. I'm telling their son he can only use it for a specified purpose, and you have manifestation.
Let's change facts. Let's say you have evidence of agreement on three elements, but you don't have agreement as to time, and in fact the record conclusively establishes there's a disagreement at time. Fact is that there's a snowstorm coming, and the parents say wait till after the roads are plowed, the son drives through the snow and is in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make it not a son so we don't have any family car issues.
Okay.
Have you established agency?
I don't think so, because the scope of the agency was limited by the instruction to say don't drive in the snow.
So we don't just weigh these factors. You need an agreement as to each element.
I don't think that's true either. I think you look at the facts of the case and say what's the scope of the permissive use and what's the purpose of the trip. Is there right of control that's been exerted? I think each one of these cases rises or falls on its own and must be looked at on its own. As far as I want to get to the family car doctrine. I think that was important. This is a less expansive doctrine than the family car doctrine. The family car doctrine provides more general liability for family members. This only provides or establishes liability for specific acts that are done for the purpose of the principal, not more expansive like family car doctrine would apply. And the timing of the collision itself is, again, another factor that was brought up about whether or not this falls within that scope of the agency. And we know, again, this was at the time, this was within sort of the time, the reasonable period of time following the parents' instructions. This was going to the place, the destination where he was told to go, and the purpose was to give the car back to Dad so he could drive it. He was not, you know, out at the store doing his own thing. He was not on his own detour or anything like that. That would change the facts. And I think it's important in conclusion to say we're not asking to expand agency liability. We're looking at just applying the facts to this particular case.
But you are. This wasn't a bailment. This wasn't a permissive possession in the outset. This was an unlawful, a criminal possession of the chattel at the outset. And you're asking that if somebody says to somebody who's criminally in possession of their property, bring it back, and they start to bring it back at some point in time, up to 3 days later, there's now an agreement that it is permissive possession, and they're liable for the acts of that original criminal in doing so.
Can I respond?
Please.
Yes. Okay. I would say that that's where the family relationship changes in my mind. That is important to note. This is a parents and their son and their own testimony. If you look back at the record, Maria in particular said, he's never stolen from us. He's never taken it from us. They didn't view it as a taking. They didn't act as if it was something that was stolen. They treated it like a family issue.
I'm just saying factually.
So, all right. Thank you. All right.